Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Wow, a podcast.
It certainly is. This week's episode is going to be on the New Home Sewing Machine Company.
Oh boy, we're here again, huh?
We're here again. Remember like 2 months ago when I told you I had enough material on sewing machines for 6 more episodes?
Yeah.
It begins tonight.
Here we are. Well, I want to know more about the sewing machine.
What is the New Home Sewing Machine?
It's not the old one.
It certainly isn't.
Bad.
It's an American sewing machine manufacturer, and it is also very difficult to Google because most search engines will assume you want a new sewing machine for your home.
Yeah, they didn't really have the SEO heat when they're naming that one.
Thank God for the International Sewing Machine Collectors Society.
They have an article, like, just about how, like, bad SEO. Should have thought of that,
dudes in 1850. Which brings us to our first question of when.
Well, 1850. You gave it away.
For those of you who didn't listen to our Valuing Vintage Sewing Machines episode, in the early 1800s, many, many, many people wanted to invent and sell the sewing machine. Many succeeded in inventing it, few succeeded in selling it.
Yeah.
It resulted in a massive patent war stateside.
I was gonna say stateside.
Whoop.
You mean the world stage?
Yes. Between Elias Howe and Isaac Merritt Singer, notably.
Guess which one won?
Elias Howe invented a sewing machine in 1846, took it on the road to sell it, but only succeeded in inspiring scores of people to infringe on his patent.
Way to go, Mr. Howe.
Including Isaac Merritt Singer, who filed his own sewing machine patent in 1851.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
And from that point onward, the sewing machine scene is a flurry of patent and counter-patent and counter-counter-patent.
And enormous gold dolphins.
Yes. Then, in 1860...
I'm there.
You are. In Orange, Massachusetts.
No way.
A real town, I swear.
Wait, seriously? In that one? That
yes,
town?
Yes, in that one. Thomas H. White and William L. Grout are in the chair-making business.
Wow, wait, can I just say that if I had to invent two men from Orange, they actually would probably be named White and Grout. And, like, those are just spot on for the region, I think.
Inspired by the sewing machine patent wars, White gets the brilliant idea to start making sewing machines.
Of course!
He convinces Grout to invest $350, and they set up shop between Templeton and Phillipston to manufacture hand-operated sewing machines.
What was Grout doing? He was just like, yeah, sure.
He was helping to invent. He put up the front capital and then also, like, went into the engineering side and...
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought he was just standing behind him eating, like, a peanut butter sandwich, just going like, yeah, what's that one do?
Meanwhile, general store owner Andrew J. Clark establishes the Gold Metal Sewing Machine Company, and also starts selling hand-operated sewing machines.
Well, everybody's just not reading the writing on the wall here about, like, market saturation, huh?
And now, either Clark at the Gold Metal Sewing Machine Company, or White and Grout at their sewing machine company, one of these two, depending on which source you read, starts selling the New England.
The whole thing, huh?
Yes. It's the name of a brand of sewing machine.
I figured.
It is small enough to put on a table or desk, it has a carved wooden base, and a hand crank on the side of the machine drives the needle up and down. This is a runaway bestseller.
Just because it's littler?
It's little, it's efficient, it works real good.
Nice.
According to lovetoknow.com, it is quite rare and valuable today. But it's also a sewing machine, so I'm going to take that with a grain of salt.
Ouch, ouch.
In 1861, Stephen French, a chair maker, goes to work for White.
Is that all that exists out in Western Mass?
I mean, have you ever been to Gardner?
No.
So, in front of their high school, they have a giant wooden chair?
Oh, so I was right. Yeah, it's all they got.
Yeah, that's all we've got.
Because I feel like every time you talk about one of these cities, it's just like, yes, Mr. Phyllis, the chair maker. And it's just like, that's meaningless at this point. Everyone in the city's a chair maker. You gotta get, like, hyper-specific what kind of chairs they all make.
Well, in 1861, Stephen French gives up chair making and becomes a sewing machine maker.
Oh, finally.
He goes to work in White and Grout's factory, and of White's 6 employees, French is the only one who can successfully assemble a working sewing machine.
Wow, of all these chair makers, only one knew how to make something other than a chair.
He earns 1 shilling per hour.
Finally, of what he deserves.
He's the only guy at the factory who can successfully do the thing.
I don't know what a shilling is worth. For all I know, that's actually really crappy.
Listen, if you're the only guy at the factory who can do the job, it's not enough.
What I want to know is how they started a whole factory where they were just kind of quietly allowing the workers to not know what they were doing.
I think it's because, like, they were all trying to recreate something they'd glimpsed one time when Hao came to town.
Like, White and Grout are like, you know how to build a sewing machine? Absolutely not. You hired! Like, what was the fucking process?
I think they might have also, like, taken their chair-making businesses and just kind of like, right, we all make sewing machines now. And all the chair makers are like, what, sorry?
Sewing machine's like a chair, but, like, with more parts. Right?
It's made of metal, and also it shows.
How different from a chair can it be? And then an entire factory of people were like, oh my god, it's the most different thing from a chair I can imagine.
It's so different, turns out.
Until one, and I'm picturing it like an Old West showdown. Like, he slams the door open, and he's like, got a cigarette, and he's like, heard y'all don't know how to make a sewing machine. And then he's like, that's strange, you've got all these people working here, not knowing what to do.
They're trying, God. Okay? They're trying so hard.
God, I love I love Western Mass.
Also in 1861, Grout leaves White and goes to Winchendon, Massachusetts to start yet another sewing machine company.
Wow, you know, if at first you don't succeed, keep throwing that fucking spaghetti at the wall, man. maybe eventually... Wait. I just realized... They found a guy who knows how to make sewing machines, and he was like, I got it, dip. This is too successful.
Well, remember, Grout was, like, the mechanical mind behind White, kind of.
Yeah.
So then White hires a new guy who's just so much better.
Oh, my God. It was, like, a rivalry, you think?
I think so.
It was just like, oh, my God, listen, and his mustache so full.
I must freely admit, at this point, I am writing sewing machine fanfiction, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In my mind, that is absolutely what happened.
Well, like, that makes more sense than, like, finally, we know how to engineer this. And he's just like, well, no.
In 1863, Andrew J. Clark of the Gold Metal Sewing Machine Company sells his general store to his clerk, John W. Wheeler.
I think he got the better deal.
In 1867, John W. Wheeler, future member of, quote, several Masonic societies.
That's ominous.
He gets sick of the general store and sells it so he can go join his former boss, Clark, in the bright future of sewing machines.
God help me, what's happening? What are they putting in the fucking quabbin?
Sewing machines, apparently.
Yeah, they got sewing machine hype juice. Everyone's just like, this guy's, Mr. He's just sitting around going like, this is so successful. this business works. I gotta go ram my head against a wall. Preferably with a bunch of chair makers who don't know how to make a sewing machine.
They get it. Okay, eventually they do get it. Eventually they do start making functional sewing machines. It was just a rocky start.
God. Wait, Wheeler, that's a familiar name. I recognize that name.
You recognize the name Wheeler?
Yeah.
Is it because I've said it a whole bunch in other conversations prior to this recording?
Yeah, many yeah. of them.
Hmm. Anyway, in 1870, the Gold Metal Sewing Machine Company introduces the Home Shuttle Machine. This, too, is a runaway bestseller.
Shuttle, like, to the moon?
No, shuttle, like, and weaving.
Oh, okay.
In 1877, Gold Metal debuts the new home sewing machine.
Oh, finally.
Which is also a runaway bestseller.
Well, it seems like Wheeler knew how to actually make a sewing machine from the get.
And on January 25th, 1882, the Gold Metal Sewing Machine Company is reorganized into the new home sewing machine company, named after their best-selling model.
That's the terrible business choice.
Their logo is a running greyhound to represent their light-running machines.
That's, you know, well, now you're mixing a lot of words and metaphors. Why not just be the Greyhound Sewing Machine Company?
No.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You know what, Mr. Wheeler? I'm sorry I ever doubted you.
The president of the company is J.J. Schenker. I have no idea who this man is, and he will not come up again.
Just a German just sort of rolled down the Greylock to the town.
J.J. was there, I guess, at the time.
I'm guessing he's German from the last name, by the way.
The vice president is Andrew J. Clark, the former general store owner.
Wait, he dipped his toe back in?
No, he sold the general store and was sewing machine man from there on out.
Oh, I thought, okay, yeah, I got that. All right. All right, sorry, I got confused about who ditched what successful business to go do what.
Everyone ditched every successful business to go to sewing machines. Everyone went all fucking in for sewing machines.
God, it's like a dot-com boom, but worse.
Basically. And the secretary treasurer is William L. Grout, former chairmaker and partner of White. So now Clark and Grout have joined up to become New Home Sewing Machine Company. And at this point, it gets a little Game of Thrones.
This is so tense.
And then in October of that same year, Andrew J. Clark dies.
Oh no, who will sit upon the sewing machine throne?
John W. Wheeler, his former clerk and future mason.
Oh, okay.
Will succeed him as vice president.
Wait, can we just... Game of Thrones with a bunch of chair makers would be pretty dope.
So it's just Game of Musical Thrones?
Game of Chairs.
Game of Thrones, but it's sewing machine patent war fan fiction instead of War of the Roses fan fiction.
Yeah. Also, did he kill him?
No one said he did, but no one said he didn't.
What was it? Like, was it just like one of those things where like everyone knows he's dead, but nobody elaborated on how?
Yeah, it's mostly that.
Oh,
one.
Shit.
By 1884, the New Home Sewing Machine Company is producing 500 sewing machines per day.
That's wow. What?
That's several.
That's a lot.
In 1889, the New Home Sewing Machine Company purchases all assets of the Orange Iron Foundry Company.
What?
Direct source for their cast iron sewing machine parts.
Oh, well now it makes sense.
Same year, New Home Sewing Machine Company moves from the old Gold Medal Sewing Machine Company building into a shiny new building on the banks of the Millers River.
Oh boy.
Four floors.
Four floors of horse?
No. But this does make it one of the tallest buildings in Orange, Massachusetts.
Well, you know, I'm actually pretty sure like Aunt Gert's house was up until then because she had an attic.
I mean, you know,
we're just like, wow, technically the cornfield's the tallest building in Orange, Massachusetts.
Please, we had apple orchards, not orange orchards, because that would make sense. Well, but apple orchards.
The wrong climate. Although, like, given the history of the town, I'm pretty surprised nobody's like, I'm growing too many damn apples.
I'm gonna start a sewing machine company.
Do you think the guy selling the iron foundry was also starting a sewing machine company?
Probably.
Like, ironically, to the thing he manufactured before.
Yeah. So, their new four-story factory. The first floor is the Japan room.
Well, all right. We didn't have to immediately. I know this is racist, like, in my heart.
It's not an anime club.
They lacquer things, yeah?
They do!
Yeah, I know.
Japan refers to a thick black lacquer that Westerners made in imitation of true Japanese lacquer.
Yeah. Sucks. Like, they could have just called it lacquer.
You could. Wikipedia describes it as almost like an enamel paint.
Yes.
And the verb Japanning means to apply this lacquer to objects such as sewing machines and automobiles.
Yeah, which is wild because we already had a word,
Lacquer?
Lacquering, yeah.
We could just call it lacquering.
It was this crazy word that we had about applying lacquer.
But yeah, this lacquer can be used on sewing machines and automobiles. More on automobiles later. For now, the Japan room is dedicated to making cast iron sewing machine parts rust-proof.
I'm tired of this incredibly successful sewing machine business. I'm gonna go make a car.
Spoilers, D.
Wait, I was kidding.
The second floor makes the national machine.
Mm-hmm.
The third floor makes the rotary machine. The fourth floor is reserved for the prestigious new home machine.
Is there like a major difference between all these machines?
Not really.
Oh.
And also in 1889... the New Home Sewing Machine Company gets so good at manufacturing their own needles that they start making needles for their competitors' machines as well.
Wow, power move. Jeez. Just flexing on them.
In 1891, Wade Warner and Company of Northampton, Massachusetts, publishes Picturesque Franklin, which is a bunch of fucking words all about Franklin County and its industry, including the New Home Sewing Machine Company. They fucking love New Home.
Well, at this point, is there anything to say other than the sewing machine company?
I mean, you know.
I don't know that Franklin County was doing anything else.
Quick quote. Second, large space is afforded for working under the arm of the machine, which is so self-evident a valuable feature that we need not dwell upon it.
Is it supposed to be a poem?
No, it's just...
a bad poem.
It's just peak 1890s.
Oh, is this like a Italo Calvino? Just like, man... a river.
I forgot how much you hate Italo Calvino.
I really don't like Italo Calvino.
Send all of your hate mail to antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, do it in Italian because I don't care.
In 1892, New Home sells 1.2 million machines.
Wow.
500 machines a day.
That's a lot more than I was expecting. Especially considering this is coming from a group of yahoos that didn't even know how to make a fucking sewing machine, what, 10 years ago?
30 years ago. It's been 30 years in our sewing machine timeline. They've worked it out.
We figured it out, yeah. We eventually stacked enough chairs that it just sort of happened.
But trouble is brewing in 1896.
I can bet, yeah.
Remember Secretary Treasurer William L. Grout?
I do.
He has three sons.
Oh, this is already very sexy.
What?
Well, I mean, they're not, I guess they're not about to fight for my affections, right?
They're not, no.
Turning me into the heir of the sewing machine company?
They are not. Their names are Carl, Fred, and CB.
Oh, they're not very attractive after all. No offense to all the Carls, Freds, and CBs out there.
None of these sons are interested in sewing machines.
Well, imagine that! Well, you know, why is they just haven't been successful yet?
They want to build automobiles.
Oh, of course. Yeah, really. Yeah. I'm tired of this functioning industry.
I'm tired of being the richest man in the state.
Well, now I'm excited to see how does it go when he gets a bunch of chair makers to try to make a car.
Well?
A car is basically four chairs on wheels, right?
Basically. So rather than set his sons up in the proven and lucrative sewing machine business, Grout gives them an automotive company.
Absolutely the best choice he could have made, yeah.
The first few machines are produced under the Grout New Home label.
That's a weird choice.
Can you imagine if we had, like, Singer cars?
Fucking weird. Yeah, it would just be like, this is my Sunbeam car. Like, yeah, like the toaster company. Yeah. Like, a Mattel car would be pretty dope.
Right?
Never mind, that didn't work.
But yeah, so just imagine if, like, alongside Fords and Toyotas today, we had Singers.
Really? But only if they had the same, like, patterns on them that you see in the old cast iron machines.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, gold inlay? Yeah.
These were also probably manufactured, at least at first, in the same factory as the New Home sewing machine from the same resources, because if you'll remember how they bought the iron foundry and built the Japan room. So they already had all of the iron to make the cars and all of the lacquer to paint them with. Now, because it's the exact same lacquer for a sewing machine and a car.
Now, was this a case of it was a happy accident? Or were these sons, were they actually just trying to figure out what they could do with sewing machine parts that wasn't sewing machines?
No one knows.
Were they just like, all right, I got lacquer and iron, and I really don't want to branch out too far.
They later become the Grout Brothers Automobile Company.
Absolutely not. I'd never trust that. No.
You don't want a Grout?
I don't want a Grout, actually, no. I can hear it going, it's the sound it makes.
Their logo is just the word Grout in delightful Art Nouveau lettering.
This is a graphic design that hadn't been invented yet.
It was, though.
It was bad.
Like, Aubrey Beardsley was doing it, and it was Art Nouveau.
Well, yeah, but Aubrey Beardsley wasn't just writing down words.
That's a big part of his illustration.
Yeah, actually,
that's what he did for Le Morte d'Arthur.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I was thinking of...
You forgot about the history of graphic design?
Well, I forgot. I was just...
What did you go to school for again?
You said fucking Beardsley, and I just immediately started about thinking about his Lysistrata illustrations.
Those are different. If you're under 18, don't look them
don't
up.
Don't Google that!
Don't Google that in, like, a public cafe or... In 1896, the first Grout automobile rolls off the assembly line.
And ran into a wall. imagine.
It's a two-seater with a water-cooled gasoline engine.
Oh, they couldn't get the chair makers to put in more chairs.
No. They're too busy making sewing machines. It is a powerful but heavy vehicle with a very poor transmission.
Yes, it's made with lacquered cast iron. I don't know what they were expecting.
From 1896 through 1899, they sell how many automobiles?
Well, automobiles are a luxury good at this point, so I'm gonna say, like, 20.
About a dozen.
Oh, I was pretty close.
You're pretty close. Yeah. In 1899, the Grout brothers start work on a steam automobile.
Oh, boy.
Which they advertise as requiring only a match to start.
I hate the sound of that. I mean, if you told me that now, I would run.
In 1900, they sell their first steam automobile.
And it immediately explodes.
From 1900 through 1904, they sell only steam automobiles, but keep working on the gas automobile behind the scenes. In 1904, they finally get their own building, and they produce up to 18 automobiles per week.
That's actually a lot.
Still not quite as impressive as their dad's 500 sewing machines a day, but you know.
Well, no, but everyone needs a sewing machine, and cars are, of course, still, like, an oddity at this point. They have yet to become a mainstay. So 18 a week is actually, like, I would say an overproduction. Especially in Orange, where I don't even think they need cars now.
For those of you who've never heard of Orange, Massachusetts, the population is slightly less than 10,000.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to take you on a quick vision, like, an ASMR tour of Orange.
A cow. Oh, several cows. Shit, it's dark. And we're in the next town.
You forgot the bit with the moose.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crap, is that a horse? No, it's a moose.
Once upon a time, we were driving through the backwoods of Orange, and a moose walked out onto the road, and Dee asked what was wrong with that horse.
I've never seen a moose before.
Now you have. So Orange, Massachusetts is good for something after all. Honestly, now, ain't it?
I've seen more moose in Orange than New Hampshire.
Yeah. Fucking put that in your pipe and smoke it.
New Hampshire. Enjoy that. Run and tell that.
Live free or die this. From 1905 to 1906, the Grout brothers sell both steam and gasoline automobiles.
Whoa.
In 1907, the Grout brothers abandoned steam to focus on gasoline automobiles exclusively.
Oh, we're abandoning the steampunk dream, huh?
We are. And it's at that point where they have a massive financial disagreement with their father and lose the factory to him.
Now, do we have any details on what that was?
Nope.
Was the dad just like, well, you said it was gonna look like it would be a big sewing machine. And all it is a freaking car.
I have no idea what the disagreement was about, other than that it was financial in nature, and at the end of it, Grout got his son's car factory.
What? No, it, no.
He took, Daddy took their T-Bird away.
Daddy took the T-Bird away. Now, was it in traditional, like, Franklin County fashion that they were doing well and he was like, no. Nobody stays in a succeeding industry.
No idea.
Well, seems like they had fun, at least until Daddy took the T-Bird away.
William L. Grout seizes the grit. Seizes the Grout Automobile Company from his sons.
Dick move.
So what's the new home sewing machine company been up to in the meantime?
I guess making the same sewing machines.
Well, on October 24th of 1898, the Japan room went up in flames.
Oh, lacquer's very flammable now that you mention it.
It's wicked flammable, turns out. With an estimated loss of over $75,000 in back then money.
Did anyone die?
No one noted.
Oh, boy.
Nobody made a note of that.
Oh, capitalism's good, though, huh?
No. And in the early 1900s, they debut their parlor cabinet treadle.
Okay. I know what that is. It's a sewing machine.
It's a sewing machine self-contained in its own storage cabinet.
Oh boy, you mean the bane of your existence?
Funny you should mention that. According to lovetoknow.com, when the sewing machine wasn't in use, a crank lowered it into the cabinet, which looked just like any regular piece of fine furniture. When the home seamstress was ready to sew, she simply opened the cabinet and turned the crank to raise the machine. The treadle was inside the cabinet, along with several drawers. Deception!
Disgrace!
Betrayal!
My name is Ken, and I hate things that are other things.
You fucking...
You have you one...
Surely, You show me a beautiful little table, and then suddenly it's 50 pounds heavier than it needs to be and has a giant useless lump of crap stuck to the underside. Oh my god,
I can't stand that this beautiful piece of furniture also has a functional use.
Gross.
I hate it.
I do.
Well, you know...
What a reasonable person you sound like.
Yeah, well, I mean, just like everyone else in this story. Like, man, that works too well. Get it out of my home. We're about to have a financial disagreement.
No, I'm a T-Bird.
I'm gonna take your T-Bird. I'm gonna repossess that hybrid.
No, I'm a Prius.
I've been burning with jealousy, by the way, every time I fill my gas tank.
If only they'd stuck to steam engines.
Oh my god, I could just put water in it.
In January of 1901, the New Home Sewing Machine Company gets a new three-story building.
Three of them?
Three, when they previously had four.
Which is still the tallest building in town, I bet.
In 1902, they add a fourth floor.
We couldn't stand not being the tallest.
Why they bought a different three-story building when their business... Why they downsized a floor only to then just remember, oh right, we used to have four of these things, and then just install a fourth? I don't know.
Yeah, like, for a minute, he was being sensible, and he was just like, oh, we don't need the fourth floor, just buy the... And then he gets in the building, and he starts, like, sweating, and he's like, three. Oh, there's only three.
They also produce 20,000 needles per day.
Well, you know, out of context, that sounds great.
And they'll have fun with 20,000 needles per day.
That's such a much better song. Although it does make the Beach Boys sound a little bit like heroin addicts.
So accurate.
Oh, shots fired.
In 1903, Grout becomes president of the New Home Sewing Machine Company.
Didn't he own it?
No, he was the secretary treasurer before.
Oh, who owns it? Oh, Wheeler.
Yes.
Wheeler still owns it.
Wheeler is the vice president.
After the questionable, untimely death of the previous owner.
Yeah. And also in 1903, Vice President John W. Wheeler
builds
a 15,000 square foot mansion in the middle of Orange, Massachusetts. Now, as you might have noticed from our descriptions of Orange, Massachusetts up to this point, it's not really a mansion community. And it is worth noting that of all the men who made literal actual millions of dollars in the sewing machine business in the area at this time, he's the only one who builds a mansion.
He's sitting there like... Yeah, your building might be the tallest vertically, but horizontally, it's mine.
This mansion features a brick and sandstone facade, formal living room with, quote, elegant plasterwork, a carved mahogany dining room encircled with a continuous frieze depicting a hunting scene, a red birch paneled library, and a den paneled in quartered sycamore.
Wait, red birch?
Red birch.
Is that even...
It's apparently a thing. Thanks, Zillow.
No, I'm pretty sure it's, like, extinct now.
Oopsies. Mansion.
At least in the region. Yeesh. Those are quarter sawn sycamore?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not even remotely fucking around.
I'm not even in the fucking vicinity of fucking around with this house.
Fucking Grout's kids just wanted to build cars.
Could you imagine, like, in the middle of Orange, Massachusetts, which is like... Which is when people aren't making sewing machines, they are just being farmers.
Some of them own orchards. Apple orchards, yeah, not oranges.
But you know, there's a type of person that orchards an apple or ranches a cow. And they're not, and like, it just, you leave your fucking, your enormous estate in the morning. And you look to your left and it's cows. And you look to your right and it's apples. And everyone's wearing overalls. And he's like, yeah. And yeah, this, suck on that.
And this is not like, this is not like in the hills secluded mansion. This is within walking distance of the sewing machine factory.
Like,
this is closer to the sewing machine factory than the Grout automobile factory is.
This is this is like point for point the very spirit of Weird Flex, but okay. Now I have the nicest town in nicest house in the middle of nowhere. Like, yeah, you sure do. Great.
The mansion is still standing today and was valued at $600,000, which should give you an idea of just how cheap living is out in Orange.
Yeah.
Because it's a 14-bedroom, 6-bathroom fucking mansion. But,
yeah,
recently...
there are 3-bedroom cottages in Fairhaven that go for about that much. Like,
the price was recently slashed in half by the bank that owns it since it got foreclosed on, because the roof damage has gotten bad to the point that now all of that beautiful interior woodwork is water damaged and will cost several million dollars to fix whoever buys it.
But a steal at about $300,000.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's still, like, a tempting investment.
Just like, have you ever wanted to actually for real live in Crimson Peak?
Oh, God, yeah. The real estate listing continually references Downton Abbey.
It's just like Downton Abbey. Have you seen Downton Abbey?
It's like
it's
that.
It's just like Downton Abbey.
It's just like Downton Abbey.
I'm picturing Crimson Peak, but instead of red mud, it's just like sewing machine treadles.
just like
litter.
They just keep finding needles on the floor. Instead of dead leaves from all the trees that aren't on the moors of Cumbria.
Welcome to Nitpicking Theater.
Oh, man. Where the fuck were we? Oh, right. Orange.
Yeah, we're back in Orange. Talk about weird flex, but okay.
In 1904, Wheeler becomes the president of the new home sewing machine company.
Did someone die?
And remains president until his death in 1920. Spoilers.
No, but did someone die before he became president?
I don't know.
Hmm.
No one knows.
Hmm, a lot of space on that estate to bury a body.
Not really. It's actually not a whole lot of land. It's like maybe an acre.
That makes it weirder.
It's a giant house with like next to no lawn, proportionally speaking.
What a fucking mansion in the middle of nowhere and didn't think to secure acreage.
Because he built it downtown where they already had. They already had all of these buildings.
So stupid. So stupid.
It's like, can you imagine? In downtown New Bedford, you've got the Star Store, you've got the Green Bean, you've got Sanctum Folklorica, and then just a mansion.
Just some guy's house.
And then no problemos.
I'm picturing everyone giving it the side eye while they're doing their downtown, like,
we've been...
Okay, ass old man Wheeler's place.
We've been giving this house the side eye for like 100 years.
I'm just like, it seems comparable to me, and correct me if I'm wrong. But it seems comparable, like, if someone who had made a lot of money on the meatpacking, like, district in Chicago had, like, weirdly set up their house facing the, like, blood market. So it's just like, they're walking to the slaughterhouses past this, like, immaculate mansion, and just like, well, you could have put it anywhere.
Yeah. No, like, geographically speaking, like, the workers were definitely walking past the mansion on their way to the work in the factory.
And he's on his front lawn, like, I own that. It's mine. Or it will be.
It's like, sure thing, Mr. Wheeler. Anyway.
Shit, don't look at him.
In that same year, New Home manufactures 6,296,850 needles.
Jesus Christ.
We are needle rich.
And nothing's changed.
D, that was... truthful, but grim, and arguably in very poor taste.
I get the feeling you're gonna cut that one, and I wouldn't blame you.
I don't think I can. 1906 through 1907, 743 employees make 150,000 sewing machines.
Wow.
Hard working.
Yeah.
Gotta build that mansion. Speaking of 1907... when last we saw William L. Grout in this very year, he'd just wrested control of the Grout Automobile Company from his sons.
You know, I was about to ask about the cars.
What is he going to do next?
Sewing machines.
On April 20th, 1908, William L. Grout dies.
What? Ouch! Oh, God. Oh, he got me. I wasn't expecting that. What do you do? What do you do when, against all hope, all of your ventures are successful? Just like, ah, God damn it. Die, I better die.
And by 1912, the Grout Auto Company has ceased to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It wasn't bequeathed to his sons didn't get.
No, because he just had that massive fight with them. He took it back from them. He's like, you guys, you aren't Fucking, look, when I gave you this automobile factory, I told you it was a big responsibility, and you have to take care of it every day.
And it peed all over the floor.
And you fucking didn't, so I took it back, and now I'm dead, and no one gets it.
Now no one gets the automobile
company.
Now
no one gets the automobile company.
I don't want cars.
We could have had it all.
Making cars with steam.
So remember when the New Hub Sewing Machine Company bought out the Orange Iron Foundry?
I remember that, yeah.
To secure the supplies to make sewing machines?
Yeah.
And remember when they invented a sewing machine that came in its own little cabinet?
Yeah, yeah. And you hated it?
Yeah. In February of 1918, the New Home Sewing Machine Company buys out the National Furniture Company of Williamsport, Pennsylvania, to ensure constant supply of wood for their sewing machine cabinets.
Okay.
So they're trying that strategy a second time.
Well, I mean, like, historically, monopolies have worked.
Except in this case, this puts them in wicked debt.
Uh-oh.
And because of this debt, they struggle through the Roaring Twenties.
Wow, but that's surely, a sentence you hear a lot.
Surely things will get better after the Twenties.
If, you know, if doing this podcast taught me anything, it's that if you're having a rough time during the 20s, it can only go up from there, and you should design a line of products that celebrates your bright future. Preferably around the end of 1929.
Fuck the Jazz Age. But meanwhile, before that, on May 2nd of 1920, John W. Wheeler dies.
But, well, you know.
As the prophecy foretold.
Yeah, that the prophecy that he filled every day when walking past his workers. He's kind of like, yeah, how'd you like my mansion? Someone shanked him, I bet.
He's the only one. Like, he's not the only one who made millions. There's like five guys who went from, like, clerks to millionaires over the course of 50 years making sewing machines. But he's the only one who built a mansion.
Yeah, well, they built houses elsewhere. Like, I bet they had nice houses somewhere
else. But they built, like, normal houses. Like, they're still very nice Victorians, but they're still just houses.
Jesus. Wheeler, the most extra man in Franklin County.
Fucking hell. And in 1920, 1921, and 1922, the New Home Sewing Machine Company operates at a substantial loss.
I can't imagine why.
Because of all that fucking debt.
But, to well, the point the that... future looks so bright, though.
To the point that the banks take over management of the company.
Oh, that's bad.
Kind of like how the bank took over management of Wheeler's mansion.
Suck on that, Wheeler.
I really want to just Ouija board his ghost real quick. Just be like, dude, you're not going to believe.
How bad did you fuck up?
Oh, boy. In 1922, the New Home Sewing Machine Company makes 1,800 different kinds of needles.
That seems excessive.
For a total of 13 million needles produced that year.
Okay.
In spring of 1927, according to the International Sewing Machine Collector Society, the executive and general offices of the New Home Sewing Machine Company were removed from 432 4th Avenue, New York City, to the plant works in Orange, Massachusetts. Then, 6 months later, they moved it back to New York City.
Wait, I hate it here. Wait, shit, we've made a huge mistake. This sucks.
They looked at Orange and were like, we should live here. And then they moved to Orange and they're like, we should not live here.
I gotta go.
We gotta leave. We gotta get out.
Iconic.
There's not room enough in this 14-bedroom mansion for all of us. And on January 1st, 1930, the Free Sewing Machine Company purchases control of the New Home Sewing Machine Company and moves the entire operation from Orange, Massachusetts to Rockford, Illinois.
Now that's a misleading name.
Are you arguing that their sewing machines are not free?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I walked into that showroom expecting something very different from what I got.
They continue making machines under the New Home label. And by 1937, there are over 7 million New Home sewing machines in use.
Okay.
Then in 1960, the Japanese company Janome buys up New Home rights. They still make New Home branded machines today, but they have fewer hand cranks and more LCD screens.
That makes sense. It's the future.
In 2017, Hulu films Stephen King's Castle Rock series in Orange, Massachusetts.
No, yeah, that I'm aware of.
And the New Home Sewing Machine Company building has a cameo as the real estate office of Molly Strand.
No way, is that what that is?
That's the one!
Oh, it looks like shit. I mean, it's the point in the movie. Series, whatever.
Well, it looks like that because it was a sewing machine factory, and then a corner grocery store, and then an antique store, and then from the antique store, it just kind of rotted from the inside out.
Yeah, and then a set piece.
And then it became a set piece in a horror series.
Yeah, and a set piece to indicate small town decay.
The Grout Auto Company building is also still standing.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is currently occupied by Pete's Tire Barn.
Now, is it still the tallest building?
I would say it's neck and neck with the new Home Sewing Machine building.
Yeah?
Which is also one of the tallest buildings.
Wait, so Orange never got more than 4 floors?
No. I think the radio station might have 5 floors, but honestly, I'm not confident.
Incredible.
So, today, new Home Sewing Machines are collectible.
It sounds like.
They were produced in smaller numbers than brands like Singer.
Smaller numbers than a million, huh? We know a million is what they were making, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a small number, huh?
Compared to Singer?
Yeah, I take your point.
This makes them rarer, so more valuable, but also gives them less brand recognition, which is kind of evens it out. What's also really collectible is the old advertising with the adorable running greyhound on it.
Yeah. Now, is that just because it's got a cute dog on it, or...?
It's got a cute dog, and they also used to advertise it because it was a sewing machine intended for use by an individual in the home. They advertised it with pictures of how well-dressed your children could be if only you owned this machine.
Instead of the fucking muddy cow path rakes that you have now.
As with most vintage sewing machines, their greater value is arguably in the practical end of things, because these machines were very well made and can still be used today with relative ease.
Nice.
LoveToKnow.com recommends them for kids, beginning seamstresses, or quilters.
Aw, nice. It's kind of a dig at quilters.
Well, no, because the way old sewing machines in general and new home machines in particular, you remember that quote about how they've got all that extra room under the arm?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're quilting...
I understand.
You've got a lot of material that needs to go under the arm.
Very big.
Very big. And you also need a lot of control over the speed of the needle, which with a hand crank you get.
Yes.
That's also why they're good for kids, because a kid's not going to accidentally sew over their own hand 5 times in a row back and forth if they have to crank a needle.
That feels like a pointed comment, and I'm feeling a little attacked.
You only had the one needle stuck in your blood.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah, only one in my bloodstream. The number of needles I had embedded in the meat of my hand, now that was a greater number.
While we're talking about child sewing machine incidents, I would be remiss in not mentioning before my cousin reminds me again how when I was attempting to learn to sew, I thought that reverse meant undo.
A man made for Photoshop.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I love that story.
Oh, man. So that's the new home sewing machine company, start to finish.
What a weird story, in like every way.
I told you, the vintage sewing machine scene is wild.
Like
that's one company.
Like, somehow the possibility of murder most foul isn't even the strangest part. And you know, if this history of this is anything to go by, it doesn't seem like it's stuck in a lot of other people's minds either. They didn't even bother to write down how the guy died.
Just wait until we fucking get to Singer. Because again, I've got material enough for 5 more episodes about antique sewing machines.
God, George R. R. Martin who? This is all about sewing machines.
Oh, man. Sources for this episode include the International Sewing Machine Collectors Society in general, and in particular, their article, The Men Behind New Home.
Oh, wow.
There's also the document Picturesque Franklin, published by Wade Warner & Co. of Northampton, Massachusetts in 1891, which means it's free on the internet today.
Awesome. I'm going to go look at how great Franklin is.
Information on the new home sewing machine company came from sewing.lovetoknow.com and sewing-solutions.com, and information on the Grout Brothers Automobile Company came from virtualsteamcarmuseum.org and theoldmotor.com, both of which have super fun pictures of vintage advertisements for the Grout Motor Company.
That's great. I just was really getting lost in, what was it, vintagesteampoweredcars.com?
Virtualsteamcarmuseum.org.
Okay, yeah, all right.
And the omnipresent source of Wikipedia.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Thank you, Wikipedia. Although the information on William L. Grout, the Grout Auto Company, and the New Home Sewing Machine Company are all stubs, and you can help by expanding them.
Well, that seems like something you would be doing right now.
Nope.
Okay.
If you would like to talk more about vintage sewing machines or just say hey, you can contact us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit up our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, or join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
If you'd like to pitch your idea for a novel loosely based on the War of the Roses, but instead it's people making a lot of questionable business choices, we're down for that too. At all of those places.
You can find our Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where we have a variety of vintage goods, soon to include some specially selected books from Dee's recent estate sale binges.
Oh, that's so kind of you to pretend like this isn't an ongoing problem.
We also have t-shirts and stickers with the podcast logo on them.
We do.
They're very cool. And soon, posters from Attack Bear Press. If you want posters sooner, go to Attack Bear Press directly.
And go there anyway.
Go there anyway, because they make great stuff.
They're cool.
Yeah. And if you would like to listen to deleted scenes or join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month, you can hit up our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
That should be a good time.
Special shout out to our current patrons for helping us pay our hosting fees, keeping the podcast lights on, and getting us ever closer to our goal of a second microphone and producing bonus episodes.
And reminding us how good the world can really be.
Yeah. And thank you for listening.
Especially you.
Especially you. Goodbye.
Bye.